Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly show about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pimble.
Before we adjourn, I promised everyone a statement, and so I'm going to give it.
Republican Representative Bobby Kaufman is the chair of the State Government Committee.
There's a few things politically that need to be said today. First and foremost, we've said this repeatedly. This isn't news. It's not new. There is not going to be any changes to IPERS this year or next year.
IPERS is the Iowa Public Employees Retirement System. It has 360,000 members.
That is an omnibus statement. That includes amendments, that includes budgets, that includes standings, that includes everything. There is very simply and unequivocally not going to be changes.
Early in the last General Assembly, a Senate bill was written that would create an alternative defined contribution plan for new state employees. But it didn't go anywhere. Democrats have expressed concerns about any change to IPERS. It was often a talking point during last year's election.
The scare tactics that have been used, I promised my comms director I wouldn't curse, so I'll abbreviate and say it's BS. A lot of these groups have been inventing demons to slay. One bill 3 years ago that never got a subcommittee is not a party deciding they're going to do something. So what I'm saying today isn't news. That nothing's going to happen. It never was. I had an interaction with a constituent a few days ago. And they said, Representative, please don't steal my IPERS. I said, for goodness sakes, of course I'm not. Did you not see the article that I made the front page of the Iowa City Press Citizen that got pushed throughout the whole state, where I was quoted on the front page using the term zero, zilch, nada interest in even changing a comma in the IPERS language? They said, well, yeah. I asked my union why they still kept sending it after that, and they didn't have a good answer for me. Scare tactics for political gain stop today. And going forward, any of these groups, AFSCME, AFCL-CIO, ISCA, Progress Iowa, all these groups that are pushing out this crap, after today, what you are doing will be completely deceitful.
The Democratic ranking member of the State Government Committee, Mary Masher, says one of the reasons she has been concerned about IPERS stems from the last General Assembly when big changes were made to collective bargaining.
We were also told a number of years ago that Chapter 20 would not be, it would just be tweaked.
Chapter 20 of the Iowa Code concerns how unions collectively bargain for state workers' benefits. The law passed in 2017, and for most workers, it means only wages can be negotiated.
And as a result of that, and it being gutted, I think there were many members who were extremely concerned about whether they could trust the word of people who tell them there are going to be no changes.
Masher says she appreciates Representative Kaufman's adamant words about making no changes to IPERS, but would also like to hear it from the Senate.
Because they have been proposing legislation. They have been bringing in the Reason Foundation, which is, in essence, a company that is hired to gut our public pension systems throughout the country. And we know that. And so when you send, it's kind of the mixed message issue.
Masher says she is worried about statements made by Governor Kim Reynolds during her election campaign. Last fall, Governor Reynolds said if changes are to be made, first, they have to maintain the current system individuals are participating in.
That scared a lot of people. And I think, again, that isn't you saying that. But when the governor of our state is saying that, it does put the fear into a lot of folks, and that's what we were dealing with. And so we obviously told them we were going to fight any changes to that system. I'm glad that you're going to be a partner in fighting those changes with us as well.
Representative Kaufman says his very public way of saying he won't change IPERS is by design.
And the final message I want to leave you all with is no bill becomes law without coming through the Iowa House. No matter who says what in any chamber or whatever, no bill becomes law without coming through the Iowa House. And so it is unequivocal and absolute that after today, any group that sends out the email scaring our constituents, I'm going to publicly call you a liar.
Shortly after Kaufman made his remarks, Progress Iowa, a nonprofit organization that often advocates for issues supported by Democrats, issued a written statement. It says, We won't be bullied by Bobby Kaufman. Retirement security is too important for us to stay silent, and we will keep encouraging Iowans to stay informed and speak out. There are some who can carry a firearm on school grounds, like law enforcement officials. But for the average person, say a parent who takes their child to school, it is a Class D felony to take a gun to a school, even if they have a non-professional permit to carry a concealed weapon. A Senate study bill comes before the Senate Judiciary Committee that would make some exceptions. Republican Senator Jason Schultz says this would only allow an armed permit carrier to be in the parking lot or a driveway of school grounds.
No further than that. Currently we have, I believe there's like 270,000 permit holders in Iowa, and many, many of them are parents taking their children to school. Now some of them are not aware that pulling up a street, right off the street, it's right onto a school ground, is school ground and currently illegal. Now, ignorance of the law is no excuse, and yet I don't believe it is state government's role to make felons out of law-abiding, otherwise law-abiding, good people.
Senator Schultz says the only place a person can be with a gun are areas designated for a vehicle.
Walking on the sidewalk would not be permitted under this. Walking up to the school door would not be. In addition, in the case of somebody needing to actually get out of their car, up to the door, say to take a lunchbox in, current law would apply. This would not expand that whatsoever, and they would need to have their firearm unloaded and in a locked container. The glove compartment would work for that. Otherwise, in a locker, which we actually have vehicle accessories that bolt into your pickup and lock, and for the purpose of containing a firearm.
Democratic Senator Tony Bisignano asks Senator Schultz about parents that walk their kids to school.
If they're permit holders and they have the right to carry, what's the difference if you just don't have a vehicle, can't afford a vehicle, or you walk three blocks to school? Why shouldn't you be able to escort your child with your gun as the ones who are driving?
Thank you for the question, and I agree with you completely. This bill actually went through multiple subcommittees, reaching back to last year. In fact, this is the language we arrived at last year. And through that initial subcommittee, we talked about all the various means we could set boundaries.
Schultz says a person could carry a gun while walking their child to school on a public sidewalk until that sidewalk becomes a school's property.
According to the bill, you can walk on the edge of the street, but you can't walk on the sidewalk. I would call that the folly of gun control bills anyway, that they're not real world. I'm trying to introduce a little bit of freedom for law-abiding citizens who I think are overregulated in this matter.
Senator Bisignano says, why restrict people from carrying a gun on a school sidewalk?
What difference does it make? It really makes no difference.
Schultz begins clapping while Bisignano continues speaking.
I just think that we ought to stay consistent, and I would be happy to introduce an amendment to this on the floor.
Bisignano says he will support this bill.
Because I think we've already gone too far in where we allow guns anyway. When you can go to the Iowa State Fair with 100,000 people and, you know, 40,000 of them are kids, and, you know, there's alcohol and you're walking on the sidewalks, you're walking in the streets, you're everywhere. So, you know, in my opinion, allowing guns in this capital. But that's where Iowa's come to. That's is what is passed and is law. And whether you like it or not, you respect the law until you can change it.
Democratic Senator Rich Taylor asks Senator Schultz about dropping off a child with something other than a car.
It says a lot about driveways and parking areas and people delivering another person to or from school. I don't see anything about vehicle, that it has to be a vehicle. Can I go up with my little red wagon behind my bicycle, deliver my kid? Am I perfectly safe that way? Is there something that I'm missing?
No, Senator, you are welcome to ride your bicycle and pull your little red wagon to the school with a non-professional permit for the purposes of delivering a student or picking up a student or delivering an item or removing an item.
Schultz says this bill recognizes parents who take their kids to school are busy.
These aren't folks who just sit at home and wait, go to school and go back home. So they can't just leave their concealed weapon at home and go back and get it. These are folks who, on their way to work for the entire day, need to go into this parking lot, onto this driveway, drop their child off, or bring the lunchbox or a musical instrument. I'm really good at doing that. There's multiple times you just need to run up, do something quickly, and leave, and go on to work, and then after work, go back, pick up your child, or do whatever you'd like. There would not be a way for the vast majority of those who legally will benefit from this if there's no way for them to drive up and leave. Some people are parking on the parking lot next door, maybe trespassing on another business parking lot. Some people are getting out off the school grounds, unloading, taking their weapon out of concealment, unloading it, putting it in a locked container and doing that. It is not incorrect to say, and the firearm community understands, that when you are carrying a concealed weapon, the manipulation of the weapon for unnecessary purposes is what you're trying to avoid. That's the training, and that is what increases public safety. So this is actually going to introduce new safety standards and actions to Iowa that we're not enjoying right now.
The bill passes the committee. Only two Democrats oppose, Senator Janet Peterson and Senator Rob Hoeg. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly legislative podcast from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble. Before the legislative session began, there was a very close race in House District 55, which covers parts of Winnesheek, Clayton, and Fayette counties. The ballots were counted, and incumbent Republican Representative Michael Bergen was leading by 7 votes. His Democratic challenger, Kayla Cater, asked for a recount. His lead increased to 9 votes, but 33 mail-in ballots in Winnesheek County weren't included in that tally because they arrived after Election Day without a conventional postmark. Cater filed a lawsuit against the Secretary of State and the Winnesheek County Auditor, saying the 33 ballots were incorrectly tossed out. She argued the mailed ballots have a barcode printed by the United States Postal System, and that could determine if they were mailed before the deadline. A judge ordered the county auditor to work with the Postal Service. The Postal Service determined 29 of those ballots were mailed before the deadline of November 5th. A judge then dismissed the suit, saying the courts lack jurisdiction in deciding whether or not to open and count these 29 ballots. The judge determined the Iowa House of Representatives has the exclusive right to determine the outcome. Speaker of the House Linda Uppmeyer appointed 3 Republicans and 2 Democrats to serve on a contested election committee. They are tasked with making a recommendation to the House of Representatives.
I would remind everyone that the central question before us, as we discussed in the first committee meeting, is do we open and count the 29 ballots in question? And then obviously if that decision were to be made in the affirmative, then of course they would be recanvassed and recertified.
Republican Representative Stephen Holt is the chair of this contested election committee. The committee is a bit like a court proceeding with those involved determining how it will take place.
When I spoke to both attorneys, I asked them how much time they would like to have for their arguments, and they both agreed to 30 minutes. This was not something that I demanded or anything of that type. That was what they agreed to.
Speaking first is attorney Shayla McCormally, representing Kayla Cater.
This contest of the Iowa House District 55 election comes down to 29 ballots in Winnesheek County. They were mailed on time and they have not been counted. These 29 votes must be counted for 3 reasons. Just 9 votes separate the 2 candidates in an election where almost 14,000 votes were cast. Information from the barcodes on the ballot envelopes was confirmed that they were mailed the day or days before the election, as required by Iowa law, and it's undisputed that the barcodes were read and they properly complied with the mail timeframe.
McCormally says under Iowa law, Election Day is not the end of receiving or counting ballots.
As long as they're received prior to the conclusion of the canvass, which is usually the week following the election. If they're received timely and then can be verified they were placed in the federal mail system, then they should be counted.
She says their focus is only on the ballots in Winnesheek County, But in Fayette County, which a portion of is also in House District 55, McCormerly says 12 mail-in ballots were also received without a postmark.
12 of them in Fayette County were opened, thrown into the counting, and potentially could have been illegitimate votes. Auditor counted them anyways. She didn't read the wire code, she just counted them. Let me be clear that Ms. Cater is not arguing or advocating to disenfranchise anyone. It's the understanding that the Secretary of State now says it's just too late, too bad, and that's fine. There's nothing we can do to undo that, and we don't want anyone to be disenfranchised. We're asking, though, that all voters be treated fairly and in accordance with Iowa law. It is important to note, however, that as of election night, there was a difference of 7 votes. Opening those ballots in Fayette resulted in Mr. Bergen receiving 2 additional net votes. So now there's a difference of 9 votes between the two candidates. There's not been any concern or outrage about counting those votes.
McCormerly says because the ballots in Fayette County without a postmark were counted, but those in Winnesheek County were not,
this is leading to a serious equal protection violation.
She says the voters casting ballots in question followed the law.
But now the government is knowingly and intentionally disenfranchising these 29 voters. And that point at which we deny voters the right to have their validly cast ballots counted, we undermine our democracy. In May of 2016, the Iowa legislature worked to ensure that as many votes as possible could be counted, leading to this issue of the intelligent mail barcode.
You are going to hear those 3 words, intelligent mail barcode, used a lot as this story unfolds. The attorney representing the Republican incumbent of House District 55 is Matthew McDermott. He says this election contest presents a threshold question.
What do Iowa's election laws mean with respect to the term intelligent mail barcode?
McDermott quotes part of Iowa's code that talks about using intelligent mail barcodes.
Absentee ballots that arrive after Election Day may be deemed timely submitted only if they meet one of 2 criteria. If the return envelope is clearly postmarked, showing a date at least 1 day before Election Day, or if the return envelope bears an intelligent mail barcode traceable to a date of entry into the federal mail system not later than 1 day before the election. This challenge concerns only the second of those 2 criteria.
McDermott says of the different types of barcodes the mail system uses, only 2 types of codes are relevant to this contest.
Barcodes sprayed on envelopes by the post office after a letter has been placed in the mail for processing of the mail to its destination, and distinctly, barcodes placed on envelopes by mailers, enabling the mailer to track individual pieces of mail.
McDermott reads the postal system's guidelines on using the system. IMB is an abbreviation for Intelligent Mail Barcode.
Before being able to receive IMB tracing scan data, the mailer must become an IMB tracing subscriber. To become a subscriber, the mailer must submit a completed application form and verification of the mailer and/or printing vendor's ability to generate accurate and scan-ready barcodes prior to mailing. The barcodes with IMB tracing are put on by the mailer.
Only a few counties in Iowa are set up to use the intelligent mail barcode system. Winnesheek County is not one of them. The envelopes they sent to voters didn't have an intelligent mail barcode printed on them by the Winnesheek County auditor. This would require a unique ID. McDermott argues the Iowa code means the intelligent mail barcode must be printed by the county auditor, which would include a unique code identifying them if the ballots are to be opened.
Must contain the numeric value assigned to the intelligent mail barcode and a full report from the United States Postal Service. We have to have a way to verify with the post office what these results are. The only way that you get that report is through intelligent mail barcode tracing.
McDermott says in 2016, when the Iowa legislature added intelligent mail barcode to the Iowa code, it was the intent that only counties placing an IMB on an envelope would be part of this code.
Every single indicia of what the phrase intelligent mail barcode refers to makes clear it does not refer to the barcode that the challenger is requesting to use here.
Attorney Shayla McCormily argues that mail tracing is not the issue.
We're looking at votes. We're looking at ballots that had barcodes on them. And no matter how many times opponents of counting these votes say that the Winnesheet County Auditor couldn't or didn't or how do we get the information from the barcode, well, the auditor did. And he verified in a statement to the Polk County District Court that 29 of those votes were placed in the mail system as they should have been.
The five representatives of the committee ask questions of the lawyers like, what is the legislative intent of the 2016 law? Is intelligent mail barcode a trademark? Can trademarks be inserted into Iowa code? What is a barcode? Who delivered the 29 ballots to the post office to be verified? Republican Representative Matt Winchell points to a picture of one of the ballots and asks McDermott if what is on the envelope an intelligent mail barcode.
I do not think that that's an intelligent mail barcode for purposes of Section 53.17.
That's the Iowa code with the language about the barcode.
The way the United States Postal Service defines intelligent mail barcode, would this qualify as an intelligent mail barcode?
It depends on how you define intelligent mail barcode. For their purposes, is it possible to scan it and get data? Yes, it is. Is it something where a mailer can determine that information? No, it is not.
McDermott says of the barcodes on the 29 ballots, he doesn't consider them to be intelligent mail barcodes. Democratic Representative Mary Wolf asks him if he believes the barcodes scanned provided adequate proof the ballots were mailed before Election Day.
Are you stipulating that, in fact, they were mailed at least the day before?
No, I'm not. I just don't know enough about that. I know that there was one filing made about it, how the process worked, what the chain of custody was with those ballots, what barcode they used, how they did it. I just don't know enough
about it.
Thank
you. I mean, I think that's very fair. I mean, we've been told that by kind of hearsay, but I mean, would it be helpful to you if, in fact, we had witnesses come in and explain, experts with actual knowledge, explain exactly how the date of mailing was extracted from the barcodes on these 29 ballots?
I don't think so. And the reason is because I think that the legislature is clear that what it intended was intelligent mail barcode tracing, not some other type of barcode. And so what we're talking about here is using some other barcode on that piece of mail. And I don't think that we need to know anything about that barcode.
Shayla McCormily says they have asked for more information from the Winnesheet County Auditor after he was ordered by a judge to have the post office scan the original 33 ballots that were tossed out.
We have asked for various pieces of information. The most important one is the information about the ballots and what he received from the United States Postal Service. We asked, we have been provided all copies, their public record, of the ballot envelopes, but we have not been provided his counting. The judge instructed him to put 1 through 33 on each ballot and then scan the barcodes and find out the information. We do not know which numbers match up and the reasons why four of the ballot envelopes were not able to be read.
Did they give any response to you at all in terms of, in other words, did they explain why they weren't providing that information, or was there just no answer? How did that transpire?
The answer was the judge did not order us to tell you.
After listening for 2.5 hours, the chair, Representative Stephen Holt, notes there have been many mentions of the fundamental right to vote.
And that is why this is so difficult for all of us, Democrat or Republican, sitting on this committee. That is why we have a process to contest elections. And that is why the term rule of law has been mentioned so many times, because when you have a contested election in a situation like this, I think your only choice is to follow the rule of law to the best of your ability, follow the facts where they lead, and don't change the rules in the middle of the game, because ultimately that is not fair to anyone. And I'm sure if the shoe was on the other foot, we would understand that. So the question is, you know, in determining the legislative intent and the definition of intelligent mail barcode.
Before adjourning the committee, Holt asks if the members want to submit a list of witnesses to be interviewed during the next meeting. This is something the Democratic members have asked for. 1 week later, Representative Holt announces it will be recommended that the 29 ballots not be opened. Holt also says there will be no testimony from witnesses.
The idea that we need to have additional witnesses and testimony is not valid because the only question before us that would determine whether we open and count these ballots or not is what the definition of intelligent mail barcode is.
Holt says because the ballots do not have an intelligent mail barcode, but another code sprayed on by the Postal Service,
we lack the legal authority to open these ballots.
Holt says the next contested election committee meeting will be its last,
in which we will vote to advance our report to the full House recommending that that these ballots do not be open and counted because, again, there is no authorization under law to do so, and then the full House will make the ultimate decision.
One of the Democratic representatives on the committee, Brian Mayer, says the decision to end the committee without further debate or call witnesses is a sham.
Effectively, it's completely unfair to the voters that did not have their votes counted in Winnesee County to do such a thing without even minimum testimony to hear from the county auditors as to why he did it. It's a total sham.
Representative Mary Wolf says those 29 voters were disenfranchised.
Did everything right, mailed their ballot. They registered to vote. They requested an absentee ballot. They thought about it. They filled it out. They put it in the ballot, and they put it in the mail by the appointed deadline. And for some reason, their votes aren't going to count.
The committee meets, presents their report, and votes on party lines 3-2 to recommend that the ballots not be opened because they don't have an intelligent mail barcode, as they say is defined in Iowa code. Moments after the committee's decision, the challenger Kayla Cater says she is disappointed.
You know, I was here when folks were sworn in. I heard them give an oath to uphold the Iowa Constitution and the U.S. Constitution, and I expected that this process would be conducted in good faith. So to not hear witnesses, to not hear from the people that were directly impacted by this, I think it is really a disservice to this process, and it will really leave the voters in my district questioning the outcome of this process.
Cater says she is considering an appeal process.
And I think that we've seen by refusing to hear witnesses, by refusing to hear testimony and evidence, that this has not been fair. And I do think that a court of law would be a fair place where these voters could really have their voices heard and where the facts of the matter could come out so that we could all rest assured that there was a clear resolution and a fair one.
The committee's report is not the final decision in this matter. It is a recommendation for the House of Representatives. On Monday, January 28th, they are scheduled to debate the fate of the 29 ballots for the 2018 election of House District 55. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pemble. Several bills are working through subcommittees. One in Senate Commerce is about fireworks. Right now, there are limited dates for the use of consumer fireworks. The law allows cities to set restrictions, including prohibiting their use altogether. A bill passed a subcommittee this week that would take away a city's ability to restrict the use of consumer fireworks on the 4th of July, meaning on that day, everywhere in Iowa, people could set off as many fireworks as they want. There is also a Veterans Affairs subcommittee bill that passed that would allow a green alert to be issued if a veteran is reported missing. Both bills are eligible to be discussed in their full committee. Lots of help in putting this show together. It comes from Iowa Public Radio Statehouse reporter Katerina Sestarik. Also help from our Eastern Iowa reporter Kate Payne, who has been covering the House District 55 election. Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson also lends a helping hand pretty much to everybody in the Capitol press pool. Iowa Public Radio's news director Michael Leland gives advice and edits our scripts. A new episode of the show arrives every Friday. If you subscribe, it will show up automatically in your favorite podcast program. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.